Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're finishing the third chapter of the seventh canto, entitled Hiranyakashipu's Plan to Become Immortal, texts 37 through 38. Vyasubir va sumadbir va. Sura sura mahoragahi. Apriti dvandvatam yude. Aika patyang chadehinam. Yasubir va sumad birva. Sura sura mahoragahi. Aprati dvandvatam yude. Aika patyang chadehinam. Yasubir va sumad birva. Sura sura mahoragahi. Aprati dvandvatam yude. Aika patyang chadehinam. Ladies, please. So since it's two verses together, I'll just read the second verse, then go through all the synonyms. Sarvesham lokapalanam mahimanam yatatmanaha tapoyoga prabhavanam yannarishyati karhichit. Vyasubhi. By things that have no life. Va. Or. Asumadbihi, by entities that have life, va, or, sura, by the demigods, asura, the demons, maha ugrahahi, by the great serpents who live on the lower planets, aprati dvandvatam, without a rival. Yudhe, in battle. Aikapatyam, supremacy. Cha, and. Dehinam, over those who have material bodies. Sarvesham, of all. Lokapalanam, the predominating deities of all planets. Mahimanam, the glory. Yata, just as. Atmanaha, of yourself. Tapak yoga prapavanam, of those whose power is obtained by austerities and the practice of mystic yoga. Yat, which, na, never, rishyati, is destroyed, karahichit, at any time. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Grant me that I not meet death from any entity, living or non-living. Grant me further that I not be killed by any demigod or demon, or by any great snake from the lower planets. Since no one can kill you in the battlefield, you have no competitor. Therefore grant me the benediction that I too may have no rival. Give me the sole lordship over all living entities and presiding deities, and give me all the glories obtained by that position. Furthermore, give me all the mystic powers attained by long austerities and the practice of yoga, for these cannot be lost at any time. Purport. Lord Brahma obtained his supreme position due to long austerities and penances, mystic yoga, meditation, and so on. Hiranyakashipu wanted a similar position. The ordinary powers achieved by mystic yoga, austerities, and other processes are sometimes vanquished. But the powers obtained by the mercy of the Lord are never vanquished. Hiranyakashipu, therefore, wanted a benediction that would never be vanquished. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 3rd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Hiranyakashipu's Plan to Become Immortal. So since Devamrita Maharaj will be giving class tomorrow, I was requested to read the chapter summary today, so tomorrow he can just focus on the verse. So the next chapter is entitled Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe. This chapter fully describes how Hiranyakashipu obtained power from Lord Brahma and misused it by harassing all the living entities within this universe. By severe austerities, Hiranyakashipu satisfied Lord Brahma and obtained the benedictions he desired. After he received these benedictions, his body, which had been almost entirely consumed, was revived with full beauty and luster like gold. Nonetheless, he continued to be envious of Lord Vishnu, unable to forget Lord Vishnu's having killed his brother. Hiranyakashipu conquered everyone in the 10 directions and the 3 worlds, and brought all living entities, both demigods and asuras, under his control. Becoming the master of all places, including the residents of Indra, whom he had driven out, he began enjoying life in great luxury and thus became mad. All the demigods, but Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva, came under his control and began serving him. But despite all his material power, he was dissatisfied because he was always puffed up, proud of transgressing the Vedic regulations. All the Brahmins were dissatisfied with him, and they cursed him with determination. Eventually, all the living entities within the universe, represented by the demigods and sages, prayed to the Supreme Lord for relief from Hiranyakashipu's rule. Lord Vishnu informed the demigods that they and the other living entities would be saved from the fearful conditions created by Hiranyakashipu. Since Hiranyakashipu was the oppressor of all the demigods, the followers of the Vedas, the cows, the Brahmins, and the religious saintly persons, and since he was envious of the Supreme Lord, he would naturally be killed very soon. Hiranyakashipu's last exploit would be to torment his own son, Prahlad, who is a Mahabhagavat, an exalted Vaishnav. Then his life would end. When the demigods were thus reassured by the Supreme Personality Godhead, everyone is satisfied, knowing that the miseries inflicted upon them by Hiranyakashipu would come to an end. Finally, Narada Muni describes the characteristics of Prahlad Maharaj, the son of Hiranyakashipu, and describes how his father envied his own qualified son. In this way, the chapter ends. Om Gyane Timurandasya Ganan Janashalakaya Chakshara Unmilitangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Maha Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Sai Buddhale Srimate Palladananda Swami Tvani Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Sai Buddhale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tvani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pcharne Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paschatya Adishatarne.
So this whole section about Hiranyakashipu is actually extremely useful for everyone. It's useful for the materialists, it's useful for the devotees, and it's useful for those who find themselves lost somewhere in between. Because Hiranyakashipu epitomizes the penultimate goal of material success. He has everything. He has all power. He has control over everything, dominance over the entire universe. And just see his position. He's miserable. He's envious. He's paranoid. He's not satisfied. He's bored. Because so many people, they think that all these different things that Hiranyakashipu acquired will actually bring them happiness. Because they've only experienced these different things in small quantity. So the nature of the mind is to think that, well, if I get this but in larger quantity, then I'll be satisfied. But that's the nature of the mind. It's never satisfied. Whatever little bit the mind gets, it always wants more. We get a little bit of sense pleasure, and the mind wants more. We get a little bit of happiness, and the mind wants more. We get a little bit of opulence, and we want more. Even you're the richest man in the world, and still you don't feel like you have enough money. Even you control all the wealth in the entire universe, like Hiranyakashipu, and you still don't feel like it's enough. You're still not satisfied. So when I was reading this, I was reminded of the stark contrast that's provided by the devotees, and specifically the Atmaram verse explains it nicely. Because devotees are self-satisfied. They're self-satisfied because they take pleasure in the Supreme. They take pleasure in Krishna, who is the Supreme Atmaram. So the Atmaram verse is 1.7.10 from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It says, all different varieties of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in Atma, or the Spirit Self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the Personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. Now this is very significant because here we have an example here in Hiranyakashipu of somebody who has attained so-called material success. He's at the top of the heap. He has everything. But yet he's still unsatisfied. And then there's this class of people who are Atmaram, supposedly self-satisfied. Here in Hiranyakashipu, he has everything materially, but he's not self-satisfied. Then you have these people who are self-satisfied. So what is it that they do? This is very telling. Because if you're satisfied in yourself, what is it that you'll actually aspire to do? What is it that motivates you? We can see from the comparison here, Hiranyakashipu, he has everything. But he's not satisfied. Most people in the material world, everything that motivates them into action are the things that Hiranyakashipu possesses. They're motivated by these different factors. They're motivated by power. They're motivated by the opposite sex. They're motivated by money. They're motivated by enjoying their senses. And these things get people very fired up to engage in materialistic sinful activities. Just the thought of acquiring these different so-called perfections. And they become very enthusiastic. But yet, Hiranyakashipu has all these to the unlimited degree. And he's completely miserable. He's not satisfied in himself. So, assuming that we come across somebody who is satisfied in himself, what is it that actually motivates them? What are they motivated by? What are they interested in doing? And it says here, they desire to render service, unalloyed devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this must be a very enticing motivator. What is it that the Supreme Personality of Godhead possesses, or who is he, that would motivate people to do something who are otherwise satisfied in themselves? That have no hankering for acquiring anything within this material world. What is it that's so special about the Supreme Lord that motivates these people into action? Which is rather amazing, actually. If you actually think about it, just meditating upon Krishna is an amazing thing. When I was leading the Jairata Madhava verses, just before class. I mean, that sums it all up right there. That's Krishna. You know, Krishna, he plays with the gopis. He lives Govardhan Hill. He enjoys pleasurable activities on the banks of the Jamuna, in the groves of Vrindavan. He's the darling child of Mother Yashoda. So Lord Brahma, in his glorification of Krishna in the Brahma Samhita, text 29 of the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma says, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor who is tending the cows, yielding all desires, in abodes built with spiritual gems, surrounded by millions of purpose trees, always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis or gopis. So this is Krishna. Krishna is in his supreme transcendental abode, which is a rural, pastoral setting. It's in a village with trees and hills and bushes and flowers, cows, grass, his friends, his girlfriends. And he just runs around and plays with his friends and teases his girlfriends and herds the cows and serves his father and mother, his parents. Now these seem like very ordinary, mundane activities. But if you actually consider who Krishna actually is, then it becomes extraordinary. Krishna is that from whom everything else comes from. Janmadyasya yataha. Krishna is that from whom the whole manifestation, both spiritual and material, comes from. From Krishna comes all opulences, comes Lakshmi, comes all the devotees, comes the material world, comes all opulences, comes everything that everyone ever dreamed or hoped or aspired for from within Krishna. And most people, when they think of God, they think of either some micromanager or some tyrannical despot or some old dude with his long flowing beard and some light for a face. They have some very vague notion of who or what God is. They don't really understand it very well. All they know is that He's controlling me. And once I become perfect, then I can control everyone else. Because people tend to... There's a Vedic statement. It's Atmavan Manite Jagat. In other words, everyone views the world according to their own mentality, according to the condition of their mind. So there's a common reality that we all share, that's called life. But how we perceive this life is conditioned by the filter of our own perception, of our own consciousness. If somebody's lusty, they're going to see opportunities for satisfying their lust everywhere around them. If somebody is a business person, they're going to see opportunities for making money everywhere around them. If somebody's envious, they're going to see opportunities for criticizing others everywhere around them. So whatever condition your mind is in, your consciousness is, that's how you perceive and experience the world. If you yourself are very critical, you'll wonder why the whole world is critical against you. Consequently, if you're very lusty for material enjoyment, you'll see the world as a place for material, as so many opportunities for material enjoyment. The majority, the vast majority, if not everyone in the material world, except for the devotees, the advanced Vaishnavas, they view God, Krishna, according to their own concept. Most people are filled with false ego. They're filled with the desire for power, fame, recognition, all the opulences that Krishna possesses. So naturally, when they think of God, their concept of God matches what their own personal desires are. So when they think of God, they think of somebody who's controlling everyone else, forcing everyone else to do their bidding. But that's not God. I mean, yes, God, Krishna, does control everything, but that's not Krishna's desire. What is it that Krishna actually desires to do? Krishna never steps one foot out of Vrindavan. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Krishna is not some micromanager forcing everyone else to do his bidding, creating mindless robots just to serve his mindless drone army to execute his tyrannical desires. That's not Krishna. That's not God. Krishna's a little blue cowherd boy who likes to play with his friends and have fun and create mischief to torment his parents. That's Krishna. That's God. So which is just inconceivable. How can we possibly understand that? Because Krishna is Atmaram. Krishna is the supreme embodiment of self-satisfaction. Here he is, the master of everything, the controller of all opulences, the controller of everyone, and he could care less about it. In the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, the 30th chapter, text 34, Sukadeva Goswami says, Lord Krishna enjoyed with that gopi although he enjoys only within, being self-satisfied and complete in himself. Thus, by contrast, he showed the wretchedness of ordinary lusty men and hard-hearted women. This is Krishna. He's completely unattached. Totally and completely unattached. Eternally satisfied in himself. He doesn't need anyone else. But yet he chooses, just for the fun of it, to play with his friends, to dance with his girlfriends, to serve his parents, to let his mother chastise him. This is Krishna. And so it really brings perspective to everything else. It's really actually very important. That's why Prabhupada really mentioned that we have no idea how amazing Krishna is. Simply understanding Krishna, and it frees us from all material contamination. Simply trying to understand Krishna will give us all knowledge, because Krishna is the living embodiment, the transcendental embodiment of all Vedic teachings. Here we are struggling so much with this mind, this body, these senses, all these different material desires we have, wondering how is it that we can get beyond these different pushings of this material world. All we have to do is consider Krishna. Just really, truly try to consider Krishna's position and what is it that Krishna does. And literally, it'll just solve all problems. All the things that we think are so important, that we think are so monumental in our life, it's just insignificant. What does it matter? It just shows really how lusty and hard-hearted we are here in the material world, trying to enjoy some petty piece of sand here, when we could be having Krishna. It's just inconceivable. So naturally the next question becomes, well, if we are attracted by Krishna and we do like this concept of, this idea of resuming our relationship with Krishna, how is it that we can make that transfer? How is it that we can become unentangled from this terrible beasting of material desires? I forget exactly where I read it, but I remember reading in one purport, Prabhupada was describing it, material desires is like a bee sting, but a sting that you get underneath your toe. I don't know if anyone's ever been stung underneath their toe before. I have. It's kind of painful. And what happens, the natural reaction, is when you get stung under there, your toes naturally curl up out of a reaction to the pain. But the consequence of your toes curling is it drives the stinger further in and squishes more poison into your feet. So it stings even worse, so it makes your toes curl even more. It's this really vicious cycle. So that's what this material world's like. It's this really vicious cycle that just drives us further and further, almost as if against our own will, into trying to satisfy these material desires. So it's mentioned that in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, second chapter, text 20, it says, thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has become enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. So this is really the process. We simply have to engage in Krishna consciousness. It's just as simple as that. In the beginning, we practice what's known as Vaidya Sadhana Bhakti. which is practice of devotional service according to the rules and regulations. And it's described actually by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the Sri Madhurya Kadambani, which is a fantastic book. I highly recommend everyone read it, especially those who are serious about spiritual life. Very important book. In it, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he doesn't hold back. He says that the path of Adi Sadhana Bhakti is for those who have no love for God, which is pretty harsh. But if you consider it, until we're actually on the Brahma-Bhuta stage, until we're actually on the liberated stage, or as Savasvara was reading this morning about chanting the holy names, until we're at the point where we're actually chanting Namabhas, unoffensive chanting, we're not liberated. If we're chanting Namaparadhan, we're still in the conditioned state of existence. And as long as we're still in the conditioned state of existence, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we have no love for Krishna. Even though we may feel something in our heart, some shadow of attachment for Krishna, that's not actual real love. That's just a shadow of attachment there. And that shadow is enough to spur us further and further in spiritual realization. So yes, we do feel something when we're still not liberated. We still feel something. Many people consider that love because it's far more powerful than the material love most people experience. But compared to real transcendental love for Krishna, that's actually not love. And that's what Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying. He's saying the path of Adi Sadhana Bhakti is for those who have no love for Krishna, which is a very strong statement. But it's very important because it puts things in perspective. We have to realize and accept that, yes, I am materially conditioned. This is where I need to start. Rather than being puffed up with our own false ego and thinking that we're some advanced devotee that we're not, and thinking, oh, I don't need to do this because I really have love for Krishna, I can just jump straight to the Raghunuga Bhakti platform. Because I've been to Vrindavan once, I took a cab from Delhi. You know, I heard the 24-hour kirtan there, therefore I have Madhurya Nam, or whatever. We have to be realistic. Be honest with yourself and admit, yes, I still have material desires. Therefore, what do I need to do? Practice Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. I don't know if any of you have had experience with push starting a car, but there's such a thing called a manual transmission for a car, and if you put it into gear and you get a couple people pushing the car behind you, simply by putting the car in gear and pushing the car, it'll actually jump start the engine. So this is the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. We're jump starting our engine of love for Krishna. We're simply going through the motions. There's no feeling there. We're going through the motions called the rules and regulations. And by going through the motions of these rules and regulations long enough, eventually our motor, our engine, our love for Krishna will actually jump start, will actually begin developing loving feelings for Krishna. Until the engine is just going on its own accord. In other words, we've developed spontaneous love and attraction for Krishna. So the way to develop that spontaneous loving attraction for Krishna, that's also mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Second canto, first chapter, text 11. It says, O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires. Those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. That's how wonderful these holy names are. These holy names are attractive for everyone, for all living entities, no matter how advanced or unadvanced we are. Whether we're filled, overflowing with material desires, whether we have no material desires, whether we're already satisfied by our transcendental knowledge, or whether we're already liberated devotees. These holy names attract everyone. And these holy names also give the supreme benediction. Chanting these holy names will give us Krishna Prem, and it's the key that gives us access, entrance to Goloka Vrindavan. So we too can be there, playing with Krishna, being teased by Krishna, being tormented as a parent maybe by Krishna. Could you imagine a little blue boy sneaking into your courtyard, passing urine because he doesn't find any yogurt to steal? Pinching your babies, making them cry? This is Krishna. So this is how we have gained access into all these wonderful, intimate pastimes, by chanting the holy names. So on that note, tomorrow is the art walk. It's a wonderful opportunity for everyone to gain access to this transcendental mellow of the holy names. Oh, that's today. Man, the time flies. And then this weekend is the Sankirtan festival, where Friday we'll all get together before Harinam and we'll have a little bhajan in the bhakti house, a little prasad, then we'll all go out on Harinam. And then Saturday and Sunday, we'll distribute books, which was it Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? They called these books, this transcendental literature, the Brihat Mridanga. Yeah, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. He called it the Brihat Mridanga. Mridanga is the instrument that we play in the kirtan, in the harinams. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj explained that the mridanga can only be heard so far. You go a couple blocks away and you can't hear the mridanga anymore. So the effect only goes so far. Whereas this transcendental literature is called the Brihat, or the greater mridanga, because the effect, the reverberations of these sound vibrations travel all over space and time. You can distribute a book to someone here in Los Angeles, and then 3-4 generations from now, somebody from the other side of the world will read that very book and become a devotee. So let's all take this opportunity. Let's all go out on a Harinam today. Let's all participate in the Sankirtan festival this weekend. Please come out, distribute books, have fun with us. We all go in a group. There's no pressure. We turn in one group score. So don't worry if you don't distribute anything or you can only distribute one book. There's no pressure. Just come out, have fun. Share this benediction with as many people as we can. And then we can gain the supreme benediction. It's all in there if there's any comments, questions. Yes, Omkar Dasi.
Thank you for your wonderful class. I have a question because I'm not 100% sure of the answer. In your class, you do mention several times Krishna's girlfriends. Does Srila Prabhupada in his scripture make mention of Krishna's girlfriends? I always thought he said Krishna's paramour lovers, or make some more of a spiritual reference, not Krishna's girlfriends. Does he say that in his scriptures?
Well, he says boyfriends.
what does he say? Girlfriends, Krishna's girlfriends.
Well, a girlfriend is a paramour.
Well, my point being is we should say exactly what Srila Prabhupada says in his scriptures, being that when one is preaching, and also as devotees, some of us may have problems with the opposite sex. And when you have that problem, you think of Krishna and the paramour pastimes of the gopis. And you understand you're in the material world and this sex desire is a perverted reflection. And that's why you have this perverted reflection. And you take it to Krishna consciousness and you can understand within you, you're not this body, and you take it as a blessing and a benediction. And that's why we take Srila Prabhupada's books and every single word. One word can change a whole meaning. And Krishna's girlfriends, if Srila Prabhupada never said that, it's wrong to preach that. Another thing is, if someone that's not a devotee hears Krishna's girlfriends in a class or in preaching, they can say, Krishna had many girlfriends. I could have many girlfriends. And I'm saying that with complete respect to you and to everyone in this temple. It's a matter of spiritual consciousness to go by every single word that Srila Prabhupada preaches, because one word can affect completely. But to know that Krishna, and it also cheapens Krishna's platform of his relationship with the gopis. Krishna did not have girlfriends. He had paramour lovers. And that was a unique spiritual awe and reverence. It's not cheapened by girlfriends. It's not. That's spiritual. It's
yeah, thank
ultimate.
You. I'll check to see whether or not Prabhupada has ever used that word before. But that's also why the whole class is about Atmarama. Because in the same way, one could say, you know, Krishna had so many thousands of wives and come to the same conclusion. That's why the whole class was about Atmarama and how Krishna is Atmarama. This very verse that I quoted from the 10th canto, 30th chapter, text 34. That's why that's also about Atmarama. So you have to take everything into context, in other words, the whole class. You know, because if you don't understand how Krishna is Atmarama, you'll misunderstand everyone, whether you hear of paramour, whether you hear of lover, whether you hear a girlfriend. It doesn't matter how you hear it. If you don't understand this basic concept of Atmarama, it doesn't matter what word you put to it, you'll misunderstand it and you'll take it cheaply. That's why the most important thing is that we understand how Krishna is Atmarama. That way we'll always understand it in the proper context. Because Krishna, he's self-satisfied. He's not driven by lusty desires. As long as we're trying to interpret things according to our own material desires, just like I mentioned earlier in class, Atmavan Manite Jagat. If we ourselves are lusty, and we're interpreting, we're trying to understand Krishna according to our own lusty desires, naturally, you'll always misunderstand everything, no matter what words you use with it. If we understand that Krishna is Atmaram, that Krishna is not motivated by any material desires, that Krishna is completely satisfied in himself, Krishna doesn't need transcendental paramours. Krishna doesn't need transcendental wives. Krishna doesn't need servants, Lakshmis, goddesses of fortune, devotees. Krishna doesn't need any of this. He's eternally and unlimitedly self-satisfied within himself. If he were the single point of existence, nothing else existed outside of him, he'd still be satisfied. So that's the utmost consideration. That's what we need to understand and consider first. Because if we don't understand this one very basic point, we won't understand anything about spiritual life or about Krishna. But yes, I will double check and see if Prabhupada used that word. Thank you. Jai. Granta Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.